This is episode 09 of Free As In Freedom for Tuesday, February 15th, 2011.
Okay, so Karen, I'm here. Where are you?
I'm here. What? Where are you?
I'm in your apartment. Recording the Oddcast. Weren't we going to record the Oddcast today?
We are recording the Oddcast.
Oh, but you're not here.
No, I'm here.
Well, but you're there. I don't see you.
I'm actually in sunny Los Angeles.
I'm in Sunset, New York. I mean,
you're actually in my apartment.
That's correct. But there's no sun anymore.
That's kind of hilarious. It's very sunny here.
Well, you're 3 hours behind. It was sunny today. It was just...
Actually, unless we've invented time travel, I'm not 3 hours behind.
Well, yeah, you are. What time is it right now?
Well, the time is different, but we're both recording this podcast simultaneously, Bradley. Am I in the past?
You're living in the past, dude. So Karen jetted off to LA before we recorded the Oddcast.
Well, that's sort of true and sort of not true. We wound up recording one we couldn't use. So I don't want you to blame me.
Well, yeah, we would have had to do this regardless because we needed pieces. But so we're doing this remote thing. It's like we're Linux outlaws, you know?
Almost, but neither of us has a cool accent.
Yeah, and we're also in the same country. Although, geographically speaking, I think the Linux Outlaw guys are closer. UK to Germany versus East Coast to West Coast. Well, East Coast to West Coast, I know, is 3,000 miles. And I don't think it's... No, it can't be. We're closer.
We are closer?
Yeah, UK to Germany is not 3,000 miles, Karen.
I'm looking it up.
Yeah, I can hear you typing, and they can hear you typing, too. I'm sure. So we aren't in the same place.
We need to know.
Well, we don't need to know.
Now that we're on the phone, I really can't interrupt you. I have to stop.
That's true. But I don't know if we need to know this. What we need to do is give the listeners a good show, even though we're not in the same geographic location.
I'm willing to try if you
okay.
are.
Okay. So we need a topic to discuss that we can talk about without being in the same place. Do you have any ideas?
Well, I think the UK and Germany is way closer.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were saying the opposite.
No, of course I wasn't saying the opposite. It's 3,000 miles.
I was so confused as to why you would think that.
I wouldn't think that. I was saying it's 3,000 miles. I was confused to why you would think that.
That is a relief.
Yeah.
Well, I can't handle this charade. We have a topic.
We're settled on a topic. It's true.
Yeah.
And it's
our topic, which we'll tell you very quickly, so that if you don't like it, you don't have to.
Well, especially because we realize the audio quality will not be as good as usual. So if people want to just give up altogether, we understand.
Yeah, definitely. So our the topic that we're discussing today is copyleft generally, I think, right? And compatibility between copyleft licenses.
Yeah. Well, somebody asked us at one point. I'm going to say it's a naive question. I'm not trying to insult the person who asked it because it's sort of a default question you might ask. If you heard that there's this thing called copyleft and then there's multiple copyleft licenses that exist in the world, you'd be like, well, so then I could take copyleft software and combine it and then all be copyleft and everybody's happy because it's all copylefted.
Well, it does make sense. I mean, when you think about it, especially since when we gave our when we discussed choosing a license on the earlier episode or on the episode of the Software Freedom Law Show, we did say that, you know, we did divide licenses roughly into categories where strong and weak copyleft were two of the main categories.
Yeah, and that's generally the way people think about it. And from a general view, just thinking about what the types of licenses are, that's true. But when you take various different types of strong copyleft licenses and then put them up against weak copyleft licenses, you don't necessarily have stuff that can intermingle because you have to comply with both licenses at the same time. And that's hard, as it
right.
turns
and the
out.
More, right, and the more, you know, sort of complicated a license is and the more conditions it imposes, the less likely it is that licenses will be compatible.
Yeah, and so this is sort of the interesting thing about copyleft. Copyleft is a concept. This is how RMS always puts it. Copyleft is a concept. It's an idea. And GPL is an implementation of copyleft. So if you think about in terms of a web browser is a thing you could have, and there's lots of ways to implement a web browser. You can write Mozilla Firefox, and that's an implementation of a web browser. You can take Google Chrome, and that's an implementation of a web browser, and so forth. So there are many ways you could implement copyleft. There are many ways you could implement strong copyleft, which is generally the category we put GPL in. But multiple implementations, just like you can't take code just randomly out of Chrome and drop it into Firefox and expect it to work. It's very similar. You can't just randomly take code under one copyleft license and drop it in with another and expect the two licenses to automatically be compatible without some work.
That's a really good analogy, actually. I like that. But web browsers as a concept are not nearly as cleverly named as copyleft.
Probably not. I think the GPL itself is not all that cleverly named, especially when you realize that the general in general public didn't mean the general public initially. Do you know this?
Oh, it did.
Yes. In fact, Richard's talked about this in his speeches publicly, that he initially wrote the Emacs public license and then the GCC public license. And he realized that it was really dumb because, A, you couldn't share code between them because, as it turned out, they were copylefts and incompatible with each other, and, B, that it was stupid to write a new license for every program. So he came up with this idea of generalizing it, so he called it the General Public License.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's fascinating.
Right, and it actually goes to the story of compatibility. So as Richard was writing the original copyleft licenses, he ran into this incompatibility problem. He realized that he couldn't take code out of Emacs and put it into GCC because Emacs was under the Emacs public license and GCC was under the GCC public license.
And why were there... I think I know the answer to that. That why there were differences between those two licenses.
There kind of weren't. It was just that he had not made the program a variable. It was just Emacs. You may take the code of Emacs and.
I actually was thinking that the GCC. That the differences between the two licenses was maybe reflected in the exception.
I think that this is so proto copyleft in some sense that it was before the idea of exceptions right. even existed. It was literally just that he variabilized the word program instead of having it say Emacs in GCC.
I see.
My belief is he realized this pretty quickly because I've actually done net searches for this, and it's actually hard to find the GCC public license. The Emacs public license is very easy to find. As I recall. But the GCC public license is very hard to find, so I think it was a matter of weeks when he realized, this is really dumb. I need to actually make a general public license.
Do you know if he was the first to use the term public license for these kinds of licenses?
That I don't know.
That would be interesting, because I think that the use of the term public license is really good naming.
Yeah, that part is good. The general part, given how... I mean, actually, the funny thing is general public actually works on its own because it's for the general public. But that's not what it originally meant. It's one of these things that sounds better as the backronym, as it were. It's not really a backronym, but it sounds better in the later constitution than it did in the original.
Yeah, right, because of GNU.
Well, yeah, and actually a lot of people think the G stands for GNU, not general. That's a common confusion.
Yeah, I used to think that long ago, before I was, you know, before I knew very much.
Yeah. But of course there are these other public licenses, the Mozilla public license, which is another weak copyleft license. There's the
Eclipse public license,
right, which is much newer, by probably 2 decades, even than the Mozilla public license, not 2 decades from the Mozilla, 2 decades from GPL, a decade from Mozilla. It's debatable. It actually is frequently debated how strong of a copyleft it is. I think it's much closer to a strong copyleft than a weak copyleft. It's certainly differently implemented. It's a very different implementation of copyleft than GPL or MPL. And then there's the LGPL, which is another weak, which is the other weak copyleft in the GNU family, if you will. And
that was a renaming issue, right, on the L?
Yeah, actually, it was originally called the Library GPL, and it was renamed to the Lesser GPL. I actually have joked that when we wrote the class path exception, I suggested to RMS, I was like, well, this is such a weak copyleft that we should call it the Least GPL. But that never caught on. I thought the class path exception, basically the GPL plus the class path exception, was the least GPL, because it was sort of the weakest copyleft you could imagine, in my view.
That's interesting. I think it probably was the weakest copyleft that you could imagine coming out of the FFF. but with the class path exception, you could imagine all sorts of things.
I guess, but would they still be copyleft? I mean, I guess that's a question for philosophy rather than licensing. But when does it cease to be a copyleft, right? How weak does the copyleft have to be before it ceases to be a copyleft? If I say, you know, right. I can imagine a copyleft, right, where I say, only if you distribute to me is it copylefted, but if you distribute to anybody else in the world, it's not copylefted. That's a pretty weak copyleft. It would still be a copyleft. It would still be a free software license, because if you gave all the permissions to everybody, it was just only when you distribute to me, it had to be GPL, and to everybody else, it was Apache, let's say.
Well, I've heard some people some people refer to a copyleft component of the permissive licensing, so of the, you know, ISC or BSD style licensing, just for the requirement of keeping the license and, you know, the attribution along with the distribution.
No, and then in that case, the only non-copyleft license is the do what the F you want license then, right?
Right.
Because that actually allows you to remove the license, at least in places without moral rights, that is.
Just to reiterate, that's really not a great license to use.
Yeah, I agree.
I just get really nervous because it's really fun to talk about that license and to refer to it, because it's got such a great name and it's such a fun formulation, but it's not a great idea to use. I think we've talked about it before. I just feel like I can't talk about it without cautioning people not to use it.
Right. They should go use CC0 otherwise.
Yeah.
So this question that we're looking at, this copyleft compatibility question, so it comes down to basically these implementations not being compatible. So copyleft needs all these details. It has to say things about providing the source code and making sure that the person has a copy of the source code and it's complete and corresponding, and it has scripts to control compilation and installation of the executable, to use GPLv2 terminology, and all these things about maintaining the copyleft and making sure that each person, as they get a copy, this share and share alike idea is upheld. And because that's so complicated, ultimately, it's a situation whereby you've got to think through how that interacts with some other license. So if you have some other license, it might have all sorts of details like that, slightly different. And that's where the incompatibility comes in, because it's trying the same general idea, the same inspiration, if you will, but it has all these different details. And so it might be difficult to comply with one while complying with the other.
Yeah, and some provisions that seem rather innocuous or benign turn out to cause, you know, this incompatibility. So something like a choice of law provision could throw things
off. Yeah, I mean, that's a classic thing, because GPL has always avoided having choice of law and has always designed itself as a purely copyright license and just basically wants to fall under the copyright law in whatever municipality you happen to be in at the moment. And therefore, in fact, that's why many changes were made to GPLv3 to make sure that could happen smoothly. But nevertheless, if something has a choice of law clause, you're sort of stuck because it's the two licenses are incompatible because you can't not choose a law venue and choose a law venue at the same time.
Right, and it is in a way a restriction.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. You're restricted to the laws of the state of California or the Commonwealth of Massachusetts,
which,
or whatever.
You know, which seems like it's no big deal, but in fact, when you think about it, it could be a really big deal. Especially if, as you say, someone's using the license in a completely different jurisdiction, and then having to be bound by the laws of some other place that they may not have access to any attorneys or any kind of information about it is potentially not fair.
Right. Well, and so a lot of people point. So when I start talking about this copyleft incompatibility question, people always point out my favorite copyleft, the Affero GPL, is somehow magically compatible with the GPL v3. And of course, I tend to say my phrasing for this. I don't know if anybody else uses this phrasing. I say it's compatible by fiat, basically, because if you look at clause 13 in both those licenses, they account for each other. So that it allows this drifting of GPL into a Affero GPL code and has rules for how it happens. But that's done basically by saying it explicitly in the license that I give permission ahead of time for these two licenses to be compatible, which is always if you're aware when you draft the license of the other license, you can always choose to do that. You can just draft it in as compatible and just basically you have to say which license prevails.
Yeah, and aren't there there are other licenses that do that as well? I think that is it the MPL that allows for having an addendum.
I don't believe the MPL has any by fiat compatibility. The MPL actually encourages license proliferation. I'm talking about the old version of the MPL. I must admit, I have not followed the drafting process very closely.
I think I'm also talking about the old version.
Yeah.
I'm not
the
sure.
Old version has the license proliferation terminology where it encourages you to make your own MPL, which is by default incompatible because you replace Mozilla with something else. And so that's the only thing I'm aware of with MPL. I'm not an MPL expert by any means. So.
Oh yeah. Oh, you know, it's a provision called multiple licensed code. So it's saying that developer may designate portions of the code as multiple licensed, and then basically you could attach as an exhibit a list of those licenses.
Yeah, although the reason that works so easily, because that's not truly by fiat, I don't think, because it doesn't really specify.
I don't know. I'm not sure I really agree with that with that phraseology and the distinctions anyway, but maybe if you explain it a little bit more to me, I'll
well,
understand.
Not only, I mean, I think it doesn't work either. but I think the reason Mozilla Public License ends up working okay is because it's a very weak copyleft. I think it's even weaker than LGPL. They have this idea of a file-based copyleft, which is a pure construction. I mean, there's nothing magical about the file level of things under copyright, but they've basically specified that if you modify a file marked MPL, the changes have to be MPL'd. But if you bring another file in any way, or start your work in a separate file, you don't have to MPL the work. So it's even weaker than LGPL in that regard. So because it's such a weak copyleft, it's compatible with most things, because all you have to do is carefully, if you have a license that would otherwise be incompatible with MPL, all it means is you can't commingle that code in the same file. And that's just because it's a weak copyleft. It's similar to the situation with LGPL, because although LGPL is a little stricter about this, basically if you always make sure you're writing under LGPL v2 terminology, works that uses the library, or under LGPL v3 terminology, an application as opposed to the library, then you can always license that any way you want, even proprietary. So similarly, it becomes compatible with, say, MPL or Eclipse, because it basically allows you, as long as you're always in that space that would otherwise allow any type of licensing, you can combine all you want.
Mm-hmm. I think that that getting back to this point about the MPL and that section 13 multiple license code, I think that's actually more akin to meta licensing.
Mm-hmm.
It's more akin to, and when I say meta licensing, what I'm getting at is the idea that you can say you can take, you know, disjunctive licensing or dual licensing, or saying, you know, you can take this code under license A or license B.
I don't know. As somebody who had strict object-oriented terminology drilled into my head, I hate calling that meta-licensing, because the meta-license is the license of the license, which is the license of the text of the license itself. which you're talking about is combinatorial. I guess I would call it combinatorial licensing, where you make the license of your work some sort of combination of various licenses, which is the classic. Actually, Mozilla also trailblazed this, because Mozilla Firefox is licensed, I believe, tri-licensed simultaneously. Mozilla, your choice, right. Mozilla public license, mm-hmm. LGPL or GPL. And that, I think, is because they have different license compatibility theories than other people. I mean, that's a whole other area. I don't actually want to go into that can of worms, but one of the questions is, are there copylefts that are compatible with each other? Are there licenses that are compatible with each other? Can you take code under this license and combine it with another one and have a result that is permissible under both licenses?
Right. I think we did discuss in an earlier show combining permissively licensed code into GPL licensed code.
Right.
I think that was around the time.
Yeah. Well, if nothing else, we in the old show, the Software Freedom Law Show that we used to do, we did our talk on ATH5K, which talked about this extensively.
That's what I was referring to.
Yeah. So people who've heard that talk or listened to that episode of the old show have heard us talk about that kind of compatibility. But this copyleft, you know, the copyleft compatibility question is a special case of that, where you're talking about different copylefts, and it's sort of the classic place where you get incompatibility, where you have license A and license B, and you can't satisfy both of them at once. That's sort of the classic, and almost basically easily determinable, because most copylefts, one will say, do it this way, and the other one will say, do it this way prime, and then you have two things that are different that you can't do simultaneously.
Right, and I think that what you call by fiat, I think I realized I say by explicitly saying so.
Yeah, right.
So those two licenses, if they're done slightly differently, they can't be compatible except unless they explicitly say so.
Right. And we got this done in GPLv3 and AGPLv3 because we knew ahead of time that there was going to be an AGPL when GPLv3 was finalized. The problem comes in when you can't anticipate what licenses exist or may exist in the future. And this is actually an interesting situation because some licenses don't even, and GPL is one of them, necessarily anticipate future versions of themselves in some ways. Or at least they don't explicitly demand compatibility with future versions of themselves. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right, right. Before we get to that, I just want to say that, you know, just to expand on what you said before, yeah, I don't know if it's entirely right to say that it's not anticipating future licenses, because there's that section in GPLv3, which I know is meant to expressly permit compatibility with existing licenses. So I'm talking about like the additional permissions section, and the additional terms. I think it's section 7.
Yeah.
But you know, and that explicitly permitted compatibility with the Apache license. But because of the way that it's done, it talks about different kinds of things that you can do that are permitted.
Right. So it does extend it to a class, but at the same time, the classes listed in V3 section 7 ultimately are classes of things that had been observed in free software licensing before V3 was drafted. So it's yep. not looking to the future in any real way, in some sense, because it's basically saying, well, what are the class of things people were doing around 2006 and 2007 or had done by that time? Let's permit all of those and make all of those compatible. But if somebody comes up with a totally new thing, and a lot of people don't realize, I've been around long enough to know, things like patent provisions were explicit patent provisions were new things at one time, right? And when Apache licensed, and then they deserve the credit, the Apache Software Foundation trailblazed this of actually talking about patents explicitly in a real explicit way in their license. That was the first time that happened, and I recall very early in the V3 process, like the proto V3 process, when RMS and I were talking about it in 2002 or something. Richard was a fan actually of what Apache had done and wanted to accommodate it, wanted to find a way, but it was it wasn't forward looking, it was backward looking ultimately. And I think section 7 of V3 is effectively backward looking, even though it tries its best to accommodate everything. It doesn't have any plan for what somebody else might think of, because you can't think of what somebody else might think of, and it could be good, right? Are the Apache guys thinking of a patent provision, an explicit patent provision, explicit patent licensing, and termination of patent licensing and stuff that went into the Apache license? Nobody thought of that before them. GPL yeah. V2 doesn't contemplate it. It has the give myself for liberty, give me death when I'm talking section 7 of V2, but it doesn't have any sort of thing with where there's automatic patent licensing and automatic termination of patent licensing and so forth.
Well, you can only think of what you can think of. Try to be as forward-looking as you can when you draft these things. I mean, I think that's one of the things that I'm going to say we as lawyers, me and my fellow lawyers as lawyers are sort of tried to train to do in law school, is to think about every possible situation that could come up, but you can't always come up with every situation that's going to happen. And, you know, I've been in practice long enough that I've been in situations where we've revisited contracts that I drafted a few years ago that I really scratched my head for a long time and tried to come up with, tried to plan for every contingency, but sure enough, from time to time, you'll find yourself on edge cases or things that you haven't anticipated before. But I just wanted to give GPLv3 some credit, because, the fact that those categories are drafted broadly sort of, I think, does to some extent plan for the future. But I agree with you. We can't know everything that's going to happen. And I think that brings us to the point you were about to make.
There is a way in which GPLv3 explicitly chose not to plan for the future. And GPLv2 did the same thing, and GPLv1 did the same thing. I'm framing it this way because it was actually Richard Fontana, I have to give him credit for this, who pointed out to me, because I never really thought about it that hard, that GPL is a little bit unique in this regard as far as its future versions. Because since version 1 of GPL, it has given the implementer of the software who's choosing the license the option of whether or not they want later versions of GPL to apply to their code. Because if you look at the CC licenses, if you look at the Mozilla public license, if you look at the Eclipse public license, these licenses basically auto-license your code for future versions and give someone the authority to relicense your code by publishing a new license. In the CC case, it's Creative Commons. In the Mozilla public license part, it's Netscape who has that power. In the Eclipse scenario, I believe it's the Eclipse Foundation that has the power. So in those cases, copyright holders who choose to license under those licenses are implicitly putting their trust in that organization to publish whatever that organization might be in their particular case, to publish future versions of the license. And make sure that those future versions of the license fit with what they wanted to do.
Right, but the FSF did give people a choice, because they did. I'm not sure. You have to correct me here, but I think didn't FSF pioneer this, where basically you can. And this is what I was sort of. When we can have another argument about what is meta licensing and what is not meta licensing, but gave people the option to say, I distribute it under this license or a later version.
Correct.
So GPLv2 yeah. or a later version. And that, while providing an easy framework for people to do that and to point that out while not making the upgrade in the license gives developers more freedom.
Right. And see, this is what I find so interesting about this whole thing. And I go here all the time when this discussion comes up, because people, there was so much acrimony during GPLv3. And there are people, I know people today, I exchange email with them sometimes, who believe GPLv3 is the great evil. I've seen it compared to the Death Star in people's SIGs. They have this evil connotation on V3. The funny thing is, if they had picked Mozilla public license, and these are usually people who believe in the perfection theory of GPLv2. They think GPLv2 is fine, it's GPLv3 that's evil. The funny thing is that FSF, and they sort of blame FSF for being bad about V3. Well, the funny thing is FSF are the ones that gave them the choice to do V2 only. If they had went with Mozilla, they would have had to trust Netscape. They would just had to say, well, Netscape is empowered to publish future versions of Mozilla. Now that Netscape doesn't exist, I don't know exactly how Mozilla license could update. data, but that's a debate for another time. But they're trusting CC. You're trusting Creative Commons. When you choose CC by SA 2.0, as we do for this show, we're trusting the Creative Commons that when CC by SA 3.0 and 4.0 and 5.0 and 5.7, et cetera, come out, that it will be in the same spirit and will be the kind of license we want this Ogcast under. Now, I'm happy to trust CC with that. I believe that they have good intentions, and they're a nonprofit organization. They're a 501c3. They're accountable to the public. So I have a lot of trust in Creative Commons, and future versions of CC by SA will be a license that I'm at least okay with. I might be nuts about it, but I'll be okay with it. But FSF sort of saw that maybe people wouldn't want to do that. Maybe people would rather wait and see. Maybe they'd rather be V2 only and wait and see what V3 looked like.
I think this is one of the great things about FSF, because it's actually a theme that runs throughout, you know, the legal structures that FSF has put in place. You know, because not only is there the option to just stick with, you know, a particular license and not have an or later, not have an automatic upgrade option, but it's that same kind of thought process that drove the FSF's contribution assignment agreements.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, it's this idea that we need to build an infrastructure to make sure that people understand what they're agreeing to and that the organization isn't overreaching. Now, and again, those organizations, I'm with you, those organizations that we're talking about, like Creative Commons, you know, I don't think that trust is, I don't think that trust is not well placed. It's just that I think that's one of the neat things about the FSF, is it's sort of, well, you can choose what you want, that developers have the freedom to make those choices for themselves. And I think it's actually a very reasonable thing to think, you know, I don't want to release my code under a license that I can't read.
Yeah, and
I don't even know what it's going to say. How can I release my code under?
Yeah, and as FSF director, I obviously agree with you, right? But I just find it so interesting that there's so much acrimony against the FSF for making V3 and for its control over future versions of the license, when it is probably the most conservative with regard to reserving the right for the licensor who picks GPL to decide, do you want V2 only? Do you want V2 or later? Do you want V3 only? Do you want V3 or later? You can go back and do V1 only if you really want to, right? I don't know why you'd want to. The only program I know under active use that still is actually technically under V1, it's actually under V1 or later, is Perl, because Perl is one of these, what you would call meta licensing, what I would call combinatorial licensing. It's artistic license or V1 or later versions of GPL. Hmm. I think it's really interesting that people do that, because I think that it shows that they haven't done a lot of discernment on what's happening. Because the same people who will rail at FSF for making V3 and creating this GPL V2 only space, they sort of blame FSF for creating that space, would happily say, well, CC is fine for doing it their way. But it's,
well, I think there are different licenses and different organizations with different goals.
Yeah, I think that's right. But I also think that people who love V2 only, I think that this idea that if you're pro V2 only, you should be anti-FSF, or you think FSF's bad. I think that's a very common set of feelings people have, and I think it's misguided. Because I think that if you like V2 only, you actually like the fact that the FSF had forethought to put a license out there and then give you, as the license user, the option to go V2 only.
Well, it's interesting, right? Because I think, you know, it's sort of putting a vote of confidence in the FSF of the past. So, I mean, I don't think it's inconsistent to say if someone is vehemently V2 only, that they might also be critical of the FSF's current positions.
Yeah, I know. And I'm not saying that's inconsistent. I think that it's inconsistent to somehow believe. And the thing is that on this issue, it's not the FSF of the past, because V3 came out and it has the same option. You can do V3 only. You can do V3 or later.
Oh, well, on this issue, sure.
Yeah. Right. So if people disagree with V3, I mean, it's sort of FSF sort of planned for it, right? FSF sort of said there might be some people. I mean, I don't think it was consciously planned for, quite honestly, but basically it allowed for this possibility and didn't try to renege on it. And didn't, I mean, that's the interesting thing about V3 is that when FSF saw this bifurcation happening, saw people going V2 only, because that was happening before V3 started. There were people rushing to V2 only. The FSF didn't say, well, now we've got to plan for our future of our license control, and we've got to make V3 be forced to go to V3. You know, like, basically, you have to be able to accept future versions. Nope, they left it the same. And I was involved somewhat. I think that that's important.
What I like about it is it's part of that same sort of principled view of allowing developers to choose every step of the way what they want to do and what they don't. And what's interesting is that I think there's a, you know, saying that and contrasting to Creative Commons in some ways, you know, provides its users with more choices because there's a suite of licenses, you know, that ranges from permissive to copyleft, all within Creative Commons. But within the kind of licensing, the copyleft licensing that the FSF promulgates, you know, I think it's really neat how, you know, how it's sort of preserving choice at every stage of the way, every step.
Yeah. I mean, and it's interesting, you know, if you look at something like Mozilla Public License, you have to trust a for-profit corporation. Which I guess would be AOL Time Warner would be the successor in interest there. So you're basically trusting AOL Time Warner to write your next license. I mean, it's kind of creepy, really.
Yeah, well, it's kind of funny that how much the FSF has bent over backwards to sort of, you know, limit the, you know, to what extent trust is placed in the FSF as a, you know, even though it is a 501c3 nonprofit. Even though it has a clear nonprofit mission.
Yeah. I mean, but I think it's the right thing because I used to call it, when I used to work for FSF, I always used to say that FSF has lots of protection for replaced by replicants, you know, and that if everybody who runs FSF is replaced by a replicant built by Microsoft and tries to destroy everyone, it's highly unlikely science fiction outcome. But even if that happened, there are so many safeguards in place that's why Microsoft's never tried it, you know. Because there's so many. I think they've tried it. They haven't tried it because it's not possible to build replicants that look and talk like me and RMS and all the rest of the board of directors of FSF.
To the best of our knowledge.
I of course, if I were a replicant, I would say this, but I'm sure I'm not a replicant.
Well, what if I'm a replicant?
Right. It's a strange thing, you know. I mean, this gets down to the director's cut versus the theatrical release of Blade Runner. You realize this, right?
I do.
Right. So I'm afraid my listeners have not seen, like, there could be a lot of Blade Runner is an old enough movie that a spoiler would be okay, but it's very possible that some of our listeners have seen the theatrical and never the director's cut, or vice versa. So I probably shouldn't spoil.
I have not seen them both, but I've read about the differences.
Which one have you seen?
I saw the theatrical.
You what?
I think so.
That's horrible. You realize the director's cut's better.
So I hear.
Yeah, much better. Yeah, that's, yeah, you need to give up on this theatrical release junk.
I'll have a screening.
Well, there's no voiceovers in the theatrical release. I mean, I'm sorry, there's no voiceovers in the director's cut. Theatrical release has those voiceovers. The producers thought the movie was too confusing, so they had the voiceovers added for the theatrical release.
Right. Well, I think that that kind of wraps us up, huh?
I suppose it does. I mean, I could talk about some other off-topic thing I've been thinking about today, like the Bellagio Cranberry motorcycle thief who got caught, but I'm sure our listeners don't care about that.
I have not heard about that, actually.
I just like saying Cranberry motorcycle thief. It sounds funny.
It does.
He stole, a guy broke into Bellagio and stole
shirtless cranberries. Congressman.
Who, the shirtless congressman? Oh, that thing. Yeah, that was weird.
Uh-huh.
That was kind of, I mean, that's a sort of a dumb thing. Maybe I should save this. Fab and I are talking about doing Ranto Fabicoon. Maybe I should save that for the rant there. But posting his picture on Craigslist, it's weird.
It's hilarious. And sad at the same time.
Well, the thing is, does he not know that there are people that troll Craigslist just to get guys to send photos of themselves, right? I mean, this is like a thing. Like, that people get on Craigslist and like post something like provocative to hope that guys will send embarrassing photos of themselves and then use them against them. Like, that's a blackmail thing that happens in the world.
Yeah, he apparently did not know
that. Well, obviously he did not know that. But it's like, before you use Craigslist, shouldn't you research a little bit and realize that there's that people just sit there and do that?
Yeah, I mean, maybe he was missing the internet of 10 years ago.
Maybe he listened to Ted Stevens about how the internet worked.
Well, should we close these tubes?
Yeah, well, if you don't understand that these tubes can be filled with massive amounts of information. I was talking to Karen 10 seconds ago. Maybe... She just heard me today.
It's okay. I put it all in a giant dump truck.
Yeah, well, you're going to have to send your audio file over in a big truck so that we can get it over to Dan.
Anyway,
I'll use the series of tubes to get it to Dan, and he'll edit us together.
Thank you for joining us.
Boy, Dan's going to be mad at us, isn't he? He has to actually paste files together this week. Oh, poor Dan.
He is going to be mad at us. But
No, he will not. Actually, listeners, producer Dan will edit our files with a smile, and he will not be mad. We will feel bad is really what we mean for giving him
producer Dan is the best.
And he's completely agreeable. Like, if those who listen to Linux Outlaws know, he's completely agreeable, and there's no chance that he would be upset about having to do some editing for us. But it will be a surprise to him.
But that doesn't...
And for that, we apologize.
That doesn't make us any less apologetic.
Yeah, we're sorry, and we appreciate it. Karen jetted off to LA. What can we do?
It's not my fault.
I'm in your apartment. You could be here.
Well, say hi to it for me.
I don't usually talk to inanimate things. Not usually, anyway.
Well, for me.
Okay. That's a little weird. All right.
Anyway.
Well, thanks for joining us, and hopefully the show was useful and the audio wasn't too bad, and thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Free as in Freedom is produced by Dan Lynch of HalfBakedMedia.com. Thanks to Mike Tarantino for our theme music. Free as in Freedom is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 Unported license. Please provide any feedback to odcast@faif.us.
He say you bread runner. He say you under arrest, Mr. Decker.